Today's share in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Megillah Daf Chav Zayin, and we begin three lines from the top Chav Zayin Numan Aleph with the following discussion. Darish Bar Kapara. Bar Kapara was Darish the following pasuk. Might have said, what does the pasuk mean when it tells us it's a pasuk from Melachim Beis? By Yisrov as Beis Hashem, Nebuch the enemy Nebuchadnezzar, Harosha, he destroyed Beis Hashem, Yis Beis HaMelech, and the house of the king. Yis called Bat Yerushalayim, the houses of Yerushalayim, were also Nebuch destroyed. Yis called Beis Gadol, Sorav Beis, every Beis Gadol, he also burned in a fire. So the first three are pretty clear-cut what they are, and we have a machlokus on what this Beis Gadol that he burned was talking about. So Bar Kappa darshan this pasuk is followed. He said, the Beis Hashem, Nebuch, that's the Beis HaMikdash, the Beis HaMikdash that Nebuchadnezzar destroyed. Beis HaMelech, that references to El Paltron Shemelech, the palace of the king. Beis called Bat Yerushalayim Kimashmon, that is what it sounds like, the houses of Yerushalayim. But what does it mean? It's called Beis Gadol Sorav Beis. What is that a reference to? So this is a machlokas. Rav Yochanan and Rishum Levi. Rav Yochanan and Rishum Levi, we don't know which one said which. Chad Amar, it's referring to this Beis Gadol Sorav Beis. This is a reference to Megadlin Bo Torah. This is houses where they learn Torah. In other words, these were Bati Medrash. So all the Bati Medrash were destroyed. They were burnt by Nebuchadnezzar Russia. The Chad Amar, Mokum Shemegadlin Bo Tvila. These were Bati Knesios, that were places where they were Megadol Tvila. So the word Beis Gadol, the Gadol is what it was doing in that place. They were either places where they increased Torah learning or davening. So that's what the two opinions are. The opinion that said, Man the Omar, that these were Bati Medrash, that said that these were places that were Megadol Torah, the Omar Torah, that's based upon the Pasuk that we have in Yeshaya, famous Pasuk, Tilsiv, Hashem Chavetz L'man Siko, Yagdil Torah V'Yadir. God wants us, because of his tzidkus, to increase our Torah learning and to be yadir, to make it stronger. So in other words, you see over here that it's a reference to Torah learning, Yagdil Torah. The Lashon of Beis Gadol is referring to Yagdil Torah, a place where you're Megadol Torah. The other opinion, again, we don't know at this point whether it's Rav Yochanan or Rav Yishuv Levi, in a moment we'll prove who said what. Man di Omar Tvila, the one that says that the Beis Gadol is a reference to a place where it's shuls, Beis Bati Knesios, they'll be said because the Pasuk tells us, this is a Pasuk also from Lachim Beis, and this Pasuk tells us, Sapra No, and then we skip some words, Hagedolos Asher Osa Elisha. Tell us some of the great things that Elisha did. Now, what is Elisha famous for? Elisha de Avad Berachmehu de Avad. One of the great things that Elisha did was he was great in davening. So therefore, this Lashon of Beis Gadol is a reference to a place where they daven, where Tvila is Megadol, and that would be a Beis Knesses. Okay, so we have these two opinions, either Beis Medrash or Beis Knesses. Now we're going to prove which one of them, Rav Yochanan, Rav Yishuv ben Levi, said which. So Tistayim, let us give a proof over here, the Rav Yishuv ben Levi, who, the Omar, he's the one that said, Malkum Shemekalim Botorah, that Rav Yishuv ben Levi is the opinion that said it's talking about Bati Medrash, because the Omar Rav Yishuv ben Levi said, Beis Knesses Mutalas also Beis HaMedrash, because in the end of yesterday's year, we had a machlokes as to whether you're allowed to go make a shul into a Beis Medrash, or the other opinion said, no, you're only allowed to make a Beis Medrash into a Beis Knesses. So we saw at the end of yesterday's year that he was the one, Rishon Levi was the one that said that you're allowed to make a Beis Knesses into a Beis Medrash, implying that Beis Medrash is greater, and therefore he must be the one that says that Beis Gadol is a Beis Medrash, Shema Minah. That sounds like a very good proof, and Mistama, Rishon Levi is the one that said that it's talking about a Beis Medrash, and Rav Yochanan is the one that's saying it's talking about a Beis Knesses. Now we go back and quote the Mishnah. It said, Avo Mochru Torah, Lo Yiku Sar Mechule. We said that you're not allowed to go and sell a higher level Kedusha to purchase a lower level Kedusha item. Ask the Beis Medrash, Iba Luhu, Ma Lulim Kor Sefer Torah Yoshan, Likach Bo Chodosh. What about selling an older Sefer Torah to purchase a newer Sefer Torah? This is the same level of Kedusha. So what's the halacha? Given lo malele, also since you're not going up and using the funds to purchase something of a high level kedusha, maybe it's your yasser. Or alternatively, odilma. No, given the lekol aluye, iluya achrina. Since it can't go up anymore, the apex of kedusha is the sefer Torah. So therefore, shabbat dami. So you can sell one sefer Torah, an older sefer Torah, to buy a new sefer Torah. So what's the answer? So Gemara says, I'll bring you right from our Mishnah. Toshma, our Mishnah said, avo mochru Torah. If you're selling a Sefer Torah, you're not allowed to buy Lo Yichud Svar. You can't go buy a single Chumash, you can't buy a Bereshis, and you certainly can't buy a Navi with the proceeds from the Sefer Torah. So that you're not allowed to do. Implication from that is Svarim Hudalo. However, Ha Torah another Torah, B'Torah, for this Torah, Shaper Dami. So if it's the same level, you'd be allowed to. So you can't sell a Sefer Torah to buy a single Chumash or a Navi or Ksuvim, but you could buy another Sefer Torah with it. Sarim Hudalal, Ha Torah, B'Torah, Shaper Dami. Where it says, Lav Dakpa, Masdis in the Evet. Our Mishnah is talking about after the fact. You shouldn't have done this, but you did it. So then, okay, you don't have to return the deal. Well, the question was asked in the base medrash, are you allowed to do this l'chachila? Ki koma b'aylon, the question was asked in the base medrash, are you allowed to do this l'chachila? Do you have the heter to go and do this l'chachila? So again, we'll try again, bring a raya from the following braisa, Toshma. Golul in Sefer Torah b'mit pachos chumoshin. You're allowed to go and wrap a Sefer Torah up with the manto that you use for an individual chumash. Again, they used to have the Sifrei Torah, they're all written on a klap, but they used to have just a bereshis, just a shmos, etc. And you could take the mantle from that and go wrap a real Sefer Torah with it. B'chumashim, and if you had the mantle for the chumash, b'mitpachos nevim ksuvim, that you could go take a mantle that they use for a navi or a megillah, one of the ksuvim, and use that to wrap the chumash, because it's a higher level. You can go from a lower to a higher level. However, the other way around, no. You can't go and take the mitpachas, the mantle that you had for a chumash, again, a single scroll of one of the five books of Moshe, and use that to go wrap a navi or a ksuvim. And likewise, lo chumashim, you can't go and take the mantle of a sefer Torah, the mitpachas sefer Torah, and put it on a chumash. So again, you see that you're not allowed to go down in kedusha. You're only allowed to go up in kedusha. Now, ketonimias, this brisa said, golul in sefer Torah b'mitpachos chumashim. You can wrap a Sefer Torah with the mitpachas of a chumash. So it implies mitpachos chumashim in, but it seems to indicate by the implication that mitpachos Sefer Torah low. You can't take a mantle from one Sefer Torah and put it on another Sefer Torah. Oh, you seem to suggest that you can only go up, you can't stay level. Versus no, keep on reading. If you read, you see the implication of the Sefer is the exact opposite, and therefore the implications over here aren't going to be usable. Ema Sefer, it says lo chumashim be mitpachos Sefer Torah. It says you can't wrap a chumash with the mitpachas, the mantle of Sefer Torah. The implication there would be that you could wrap another Sefer Torah with that mantle. Ha Torah b'Torah, Shaper Dami. And therefore, the implication of the Reisha would say that you cannot do this. The implication of the Sefer would be that you could do it, and therefore, Ela Meha, Lekul L'mishma Minah. The two implications are contradictory, and therefore, neither one is correct, and we can't learn anything from implication over here. Try again. Toshma, from the following braisa, Menichin Sefer Torah, Agabi Torah. You're allowed to put one Sefer Torah on top of another Sefer Torah. And likewise, you can put a Sefer Torah, the Torah Agabi Chumashim, you can put a Sefer Torah on top of a single Sefer of Chumash. The Chumashim, and you can put a single Sefer of Chumash, Agabi Nevi'im Uksuvim, you can put that upon a scroll of Navi or a scroll of Megillah of Ksuvim, but not the other way around. Avalo Nevi'im Uksuvim Agabi Chumashim, but you can't put Nevi'im and Ksuvim on top of Chumashim, and below Chumashim Agabi Torah, and likewise, you can't put a Chumash on top of a Torah. Now, it's interesting, by the way, as an aside, it seems to equate Nevi'im and Ksuvim, and there's a discussion, are they actually equated over here, or does this same rule apply that Ksuvim can't be put on top of a Navi? It seems the simple understanding is that they're both the same level, and a Navi could have a Ksuvim on top of it, and there are those that agree with that, and those that disagree with that. Okay, bottom line is, this Brisa says you can't put one Sefer Torah on top of another Sefer Torah. That implies that there is an allowance to go sell one Sefer Torah for another Sefer Torah, because you're allowed to go put one Sefer Torah on top of another Sefer Torah, so therefore you must be able to go and sell one Sefer Torah for another Sefer Torah. They have the same level of Kedusha. So Gemara says, no, that's not a Raya. Hanocha Kamris, why is that a good Raya? You're telling me because you can place one Sefer Torah on top of another Sefer Torah, therefore you can sell one Sefer Torah for another Sefer Torah? Who says that that's true? Shiny Hanocha, the difference is, when you're placing something, it's the Lefsha. You have no room in the Aron Kodesh, so you have to put one on top of the other. And therefore, that's a situation where you have no alternative, no choice. You have only room, they used to lie them flat. Again, there's a machlokis as to how you're supposed to put the Sefer Torah in the Aron. There is an opinion that says you should lie it flat. And we paskin that you're supposed to stand it up. In any event, since if you're lying them flat, you have only a limited amount of room, so you have to put one Sefer Torah on top of another Sefer Torah, so it's an Yefshah situation. If there's an Yefshah situation, what can you do? But when you have a choice to sell an old Sefer Torah for a new Sefer Torah, that you might not be allowed to do. So we have no riot. And I'll show you that this is correct, because dilo tema achi, because if you're not going to argue that Yefshah is different, so michron hechi korchinen, how would you be allowed to wrap up a Sefer Torah? How could you roll a Sefer Torah? When you're rolling a Sefer Torah, you have a part of the Sefer Torah on top of the other part of the Sefer Torah. It's rolled over, right? You look at a Sefer Torah, it's all rolled up. So you have the parts that are on the outside are on top of the parts that are inside of the rolled Sefer Torah. So Michrach Hechi Karchin, how would you be allowed to do this? B'ha'ko Yosef Dapa Achaber, you're putting one daf, one piece of the cloth on top of the other piece of the cloth. Aye, what must you say? Elokibim delo Efshar Shari, so to Hachanami, Kibim delo Efshar Shari. You're dealing with something that's impossible to do it otherwise, so you can't bring me a raya to something that is possible to do otherwise. So therefore, that's a perfect raya that you can't bring out a raya from Hanocha to a sale. Try again. Toshma, the Omer Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Omer Rav Yochanan. We learn from the following statement of Rabba Bar Bar Chana in the name of Rav Yochanan. And he said this, Mishum Rabbi Shimon Yom Liel, and it was said over the name of Shimon Liel, Lo Yimkar Adam Sefer Torah Yoshan Likach B'chodesh. Oh, he says, Beferish, you're not allowed to go sell an old Sefer Torah to go purchase a new Sefer Torah. Oh, seems that it's asked and answered from the Tana, Rabbi Shimon Yom Liel. Someone says, no, also, Lana Raya. Also, Mishum Pshiusa. That was the situation we were talking about, a concern of Pshia, because when you sell the first Sefer Torah, hey, you now have all those funds. You may go and buy a round of drinks for everybody. You may go and use it to purchase something else. So therefore, that's why Rishon Lezion says, you're not allowed to go and sell an old Sefer Torah and use the proceeds, likach bo chodesh, to go and buy a new one, because he's concerned that you may not buy the new one. And they'll start using it to fix the base knesses up a little bit. They'll use it to make a playground, and all of a sudden, no Sefer Torah. So therefore, so you can't bring me right from a case of Pshia. Our original question was, you have the old Sefer Torah here, and you have the new Sefer Torah over there, and you want to sell the old Sefer Torah and purchase right then and there the new Sefer Torah. There's no chance for the money to be used for something else. That was the question. My, are you allowed to do this, or are you not allowed to do this? So we're still left with our original question. We don't have an answer. Toshba, we try again. The Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yochanan's name of Rabbi Meir. Ain Mochun Sefer Torah. You're not allowed to sell the Sefer Torah, except for the following two things. Ela Lomo Torah, to learn Torah. So that seems to imply that you could sell it for another Sefer Torah. Elisa Isha, and to get married. Now therefore, Shema Mina, Torah B'Torah, Shaper Dami. You see from Rav Meir's statement that you're allowed to go sell a Sefer Torah to go and learn Torah, so therefore you can sell it to go purchase a new Sefer Torah. Where it says, again, not necessarily so. Dilma, shiny limud, maybe learning is different than purchasing. Shal limud, maybe lemaisa, to go and pay yeshiva tuition with the sale of a Sefer Torah, that's going to lead you to doing limud lasos in order to learn. And that's a higher level. And likewise with a wife, Ishanami, because we have the pasuk that tells us from Yeshaya, Lo sol bura lo shevis yitzara. It's not right for a person to be alone. In other words, to get married is an extremely important thing, and you need to be successful in life with your Torah learning if you're married. So therefore, these two situations, to learn Torah or to get married, are the exceptions to the rule. But lav dafka, can you bring me your raya? You're allowed to go and sell an older Sefer Torah to purchase a newer Sefer Torah. And Tana Rabbanan, we learn further in the following brayso, Lo yimkar adam sefer Torah, afal pi she'eino tzarech lo. Person is not allowed to sell a sefer Torah, even though he doesn't need it. Like a shul has 12 sefer Torah, they don't need all 12. So they want to sell one in order to go and build a new wing in the shul. So lo yimkar adam sefer Torah, afal pi she'eino tzarech lo. Even though you don't need that sefer Torah anymore, you're not allowed to sell it. Furthermore, Yosef al-Kain, in addition to that, Amar Rishon Gamliel, Rishon Gamliel added on and he said, Afilu, Elam Ayocha. He doesn't have a lot to eat. Now, notice how I said a lot to eat. It was Pikuach Nefashos, you can do anything, except for the three cardinal sins. So, selling Sefer Torah is a big issue to sell it for mundane things, but it doesn't push aside Pikuach Nefashos. So, if a person is starving, and the only way they can get any food, and they won't starve to death, is by selling a Sefer Torah, so that you'd be allowed to do it. But here we're talking about, he doesn't have enough to eat. He has enough to eat to survive, but he doesn't have a lot to eat. So Afilu Ein Lo Ma'ayocha, he doesn't have enough to eat, and he sells a Sefer Torah, or Machar Sefer Torah, or Obito, where he sells his daughter. Technically, a person's allowed to sell off his daughter, if she's below the age of Bas Mitzvah, to be a Amoha Evriya, to be a maidservant to somebody. The whole purpose of that was for very poor people that didn't have enough money to give a dowry to their daughter, so they would, so to say, use their daughter to work for her dowry, and the person that they sold her to would hopefully marry her, or her son would marry her at the conclusion of the period of time of being sold as an Omo Evriya. So the Shimon Gamliel is telling us is this is a terrible thing to do. Don't go sell your Sefer Torah for food, and don't go and sell your daughter your Bito, even though technically they may be allowed. In a raw simon bracha liolim, you're never going to see any benefit from the money that you got in this situation for the rest of your life. Something will happen. You know, you're going to have suddenly a couple hundred bucks in your pocket. You're going to have money in your pocket. All of a sudden, your carburetor is going to break. You're suddenly going to spend that all. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will reconcile things, and he doesn't want you. Shimon Gamliel says, don't go do these things, even if you don't have a lot of food, and you're doing it for a reasonable reason, and you really can't support your family, so you sell off your daughter in this situation to get a little bit of money for food, so that's not going to be a good thing. Ein arosim and brach liolam. So we never answered our question, can you go and sell an old Sefer Torah for a new Sefer Torah, and we aren't answering that in the Gemara. Then we quote the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, when you're selling something for something that you're allowed to sell it for, but they're leftover funds. So you sold a chumish, and you purchased a Sefer Torah with it. Now they're leftover funds. What can you do with those leftover funds? So the Mishnah said, you're not allowed to take those leftover funds and go and use them for anything that is a lower level of Kedusha. You have to use the Chayim B'mosreim, even the leftover funds. Now, on this, Omer Rava, Rava comments, and he says, Lo Shono Ela Shemachu Vosiru. We're talking here where they sold the higher level Kedusha item, and they sold it appropriately, but they had money left over. So, Avo Gavu Vosiru. But if you're talking about collecting money to go purchase a Sefer Torah, so you have an appeal, and you're asking people to donate to buy a new Sefer Torah. So the new Sefer Torah is $50,000, and you collect $60,000. So with the extra $10,000, that was Hazmano Lav Milsi, so it was used ideally for a Sefer Torah, but with the extra $10,000, they can do whatever the shul thinks is the best usage of that money. Avul gavu vosiru. If you're then an appeal and you have extra funds raised, mutter, then you can do with it whatever the shul thinks is appropriate. That's what Rava said, and Abaye doesn't like it. Esri Abaye says, wait a second, Bamedvar Mamurim, we have a braisa that says, under what circumstances, v'chei mosreim, shalo hisnu, where they didn't make it tonight, as to what they're supposed to use the money for. Avul hisnu, but if they said that these funds that we're collecting ought to be used for a specific purpose, so then afilu l'duch susya mutter. Then, if they didn't make it tonight that they're using it for this, then you're allowed to use the leftover funds. But if you made it tonight, and you said you were collecting for the Sefer Torah, so then you're not allowed to use it for something else. Now, duch susya, we'll see in a moment in the Gemara, is talking about a pony express, right? The word sus is in this word duch susya, and Rashi points out later on that this is called parasha demasa. This is like a federal express for the city, that they would have a person that they would have on retainer, b'nei yir sochun odom rochev sus, they would hire a person who rides a horse, sheyesh lahem mezum, and he should always be ready, l'sholcho b'shlichos l'moshe lo'ir kishi yitzricho, that he would always be ready to go carry their case towards the moshel of the city, the governor, the leader of the city, the mayor, and they would have this person on retainer, so he would always be ready to go and address any needs that they had. So Abaye says that if they made an appeal, it says that you're only allowed to use the excess funds if they didn't make it tonight. But if they made it tonight, then you're not allowed to use them. They have to be used for what it was originally collected for. Now, Hechidami, what exactly is this case? So, Ilei Moshe Mochru Vosiru, if you're telling me it's a case where they had something that was sold and they had leftover funds, so then the tonight doesn't make any sense. Ki hisnu, my half, the fact that you made the tonight all you want, it doesn't do any good. Can't make it tonight. Oh, we're selling the Sefer Torah on the condition that we want to go and purchase, English books for our library. You're not allowed to do that. The tonight doesn't help you. So obviously it's not talking about that case. Elo, it must be talking about the case Shagavu Vosiru. As I explained, they're talking about they made a collection for Sefer Torah and they had excess funds left over. So if they made it tonight, it said, if we have extra funds afterwards, we can use them for whatever we want, so then that's allowable. But if they didn't make such a tonight, so then all the funds have to be used for what they were collected for. Therefore, Taimo de Hisnu. Halo Hisnu Lo. It's only if they made it tonight that the extra funds can be used for something else, is it acceptable. But if they didn't make such a tonight, so then it's not acceptable. So that's Abaye's question on Rava. And the Gemara answers, no, li'olam shemachru velsiru. We are, in fact, talking about a case where they sold something. They had a lower-level Kedusha item, and they sold it to purchase a higher-level Kedusha item, and now there's some funds left over. L'molam shemachru, they did sell it, velsiru, the extra funds. V'hochi kamar, and this is what it's now telling us. Bamed var mamurim, under what circumstances does this apply? Shelo hisnu shiva tuve ya'ir, the maibran shi'ir. Again, the seven elders of the town, the seven councilmen, when they're working with the authority and in front of the Anshei Ha'ir, so then they're allowed to go and do whatever they want with these funds. So therefore, if they didn't make this stipulation, so then the low-level Kedusha item can only be used to purchase the higher-level Kedusha item, and any funds that are left over still have to be used for the higher-level Kedusha. But I will hisnu Shiva Tuvi Ha'ir, the Maibar Anshei Ha'ir, if the seven elders of the town, the seven trustees, the councilmen, in the presence of the Maimon Anshei Ha'ir, did say, no, we're going to sell this lower-level Kedusha item to purchase a higher-level Kedusha item, and if there's any funds left over afterwards, then we can use it for whatever we want, then afilu l'duch susya namimutu. Then they can use it for the Pony Express. They can use it for this guy that should be on a retainer to go and bring their important items to the ruler as needed. Abaye said to this one person, his job was to arrange the Mishnayos and the Braises in front of Rav Sheshes. Now, he asked them, "Mi shmi'aloch mi Rav Sheshes? Have you ever heard Rav Sheshes say, my duch susya? What exactly is duch susya?" So this Amora, who was arranging the Braises in front of Rav Sheshes, said, "Hoch yam Rav Sheshes." This is what Rav Sheshes said. Parasha Demosa, as I explained, this is the person that the city put on retainer, that he would always be available to go and ride on his horse and bring important information to the Moshe, the local ruler. Amar Abaye Hilkach, you see from here, Abaye says, Haitzuvim Rabbanon, Deshamale Milsa, Veloyoda Pirusha. You see from here, if there's a young Talmud Chacham that hurts something, but he doesn't know what it is, so go and find Lishayle Kameh, Deshliach Kameh Rabbanon. Go and ask somebody who's a regular in front of the Chacham, because Mustama will have heard it in the Shir. So if you don't know something, go and ask a Talmud Chacham what it means. The Lo Efshah, the Lo Shmiele, Mingav Rabba, because if he was a regular Talmud by an Adam Gadol, then undoubtedly he will know the answer to your question. As was the case over here with the one who was Masada, the Brises of Rav Sheshes, he was able to go and explain to Abaye what Duch Susya meant. Now the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yochanan Mishum Rav Meir, another statement that Rav Yochanan made Mishum Rav Meir. We had a statement before, but that was a couple of lines before, so the Mefarshim explained that in the Tosefta, the Merom Misada says in the Tosefta, these statements are found one after the other, and that's why this is brought over here as well. And he said, if the people from one city go to another city and they have an appeal in that other city, and they were collecting for an important cause for tztaka in the city that they went to, so you have a whole people from town A, they went to town B, and in town B, they have an appeal. So the people from town A should give to the appeal in town B, when they gave a head tax, so they said, all of you guys have to each give $100, so Nostim, they give that amount. However, Ukashen Boyim, when they leave City B to return home, they take the money back, and they take that funds that were given for Tztaka and they use it for their own city, for City A. So they participate in City B's appeal, but the money doesn't go to City B. They're allowed to take their money back. This is talking about a group of people. B'nei Yair, you have a whole group of people. For an individual, it doesn't apply, the Mefarshim explained. But when you have a whole group of people from City A, and they're going to City B and they're participating in the appeal, they're given a head tax, each of them has to give $100, so then when they leave the city and return to City A, they take their money back with them. And the Braisa supports this statement of Yochanan in the name of Meir. Again, you have a large group of people from City A that go to City B, they give a head tax, each of the people from City A now has to give $100, so they should give the money. However, when they return to leave to their city, they take the money back that they were given. And in addition, but if an individual goes and they give a head tax on him and said, listen, you know, we need your help in supporting the anim of our city, so then, since he's an individual, so he gives it to City B and City B uses it, and when he leaves, he doesn't get to take it back. Now, Rav Huna goes at Tadis. So one time Rav Huna was goes to a Tainis, and as part of the Tainis, they collected Staka, and all Legabe and many people from the surrounding area came to participate in the fast that Rav Huna was gozar, and so all the gabe Rav Chana bar Chaniloi l'chol b'nei Mase. So Rav Chana bar Chaniloi, he came from City A to now City B where Rav Huna was, and he came with him l'chol b'nei Masai. He came with him a large contingent of people from City A. So Rav Muala Yitzchaka, and in Rav Huna's city, they had a head tax. They said everybody needs to give $100 at Staka over here to help us tshuva tvilu tztaka, my vidas ra gzeir. So therefore, give tztaka. So they collected the tztaka of Yovu, and Rav Chana bar Chaniloi and all the people from his town, from City A, they dutifully gave the money to tztaka to Rav Huna. No, kiboy lemeisei, now they're about to return to their city, Amalei, they said to Rav Huna, no svo lon mar v'nezo. Please give us back our funds and we'll go redistribute it to the people in City A, like the din says. When a fine is bought, Niyam Asin, and we'll give that money to use to support the Aniyam in our town. But Rav Huna said, not so fast. Amar Lahu, Rav Huna said to Rav Chana bar Chaniloi, Tanina, we learned, Bamed Var Mamur, under what circumstances does that take effect that the people from City A, when they give money to City B, they're allowed to go take that money back and then use it to be mefinis the aniyim in City A. That's only b'she'ein sham, when we turn to chazayin omud beis chaver'ir, when there isn't a person like myself, Rav Huna is saying, that is in charge of both cities. So I'm in charge really of both cities. I'm the chaver'ir. I'm the, you know, the local rav of this city, but I'm also the rav of your city. I'm the Rash Bahag. I'm the chief rabbi. So I'm the chief rabbi of the state of New York. So every place in New York is under my dominion. And therefore, if there's a chaver ear, this then doesn't apply. That's only that we said that City A can take the money back to their own city from City B, is when City A and City B are not really connected. If the person in City B is also in charge of City A, then you leave the money with the Rav of City B, because he's really the Rav also of City A. And even more so, and then I'm the guy that gives the money for tzedakah in your town. I'm the local major Tomchei Shabbos for all the local towns, including town A, city A. So therefore, it's inappropriate for you to take the money back in this situation, because when you take it back to be financed the Aniyim in your city, I'm the one that's befinanced them. So therefore, leave the money here with me, and I'll make sure that it gets distributed appropriately both in city A and in city B. That's what Rav Huna told. Okay. Now we go on to the next Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us, Ein mochrim eshel rabim liyochid. The people in a city are not allowed to sell their public shul to an individual, to make a shtibel out of it, to make a private shul out of it. Why? Rebbeya says that it's going down. Not so many people are going to daven it anymore. It used to be the big public shul, and now it's going to be a little private shul. So it's going down in Kedusha. You're not allowed to do that. That's the opinion of Rebbeya. Chacham said to Rebbeya, Amalo, hey, Imkain, then you shouldn't be allowed to sell a shul from a large city and bring it to a small city, because also it's going to go down in Kedusha. So therefore, if you're talking about the principle of going down in Kedusha, so then just like you can't sell a shul in a city to a private individual, you shouldn't be allowed to sell a shul from a larger city to a smaller city. But that's not true. Everybody agrees you can sell a shul from a larger city to a smaller city. So since that's allowed, likewise, selling a shul of the rabbim to an individual is also allowed. Mari starts off and says, Shapir ka'amri le rabbonu le Rabbi Meir. This is actually a very good taina that the Chacham had against Rabbi Meir. Why should there be a difference between a large city to a small city, which is allowed, and a public shul to a private shul? Why should there be any difference? Both of them are, quote, going down in Kedusha, yet you allow one and don't allow the other. So how does Rabbi Meir respond, Rabbi Meir? He says, no, Meir gedola lir ketana. Meikara Kadisha, Hashanami Kadisha. When you're going from a larger city to a smaller city, it has the status of being a public shul. It doesn't make a difference if it's from a large city to a small city. It still has the status of a public shul. It retains its Kedusha. No Kedusha level has changed. However, when you go Meirabim Liyachid Leka Kedusha, when you're going from a public shul to a private shul, it no longer has the Kedusha. A private shul doesn't have the Kedusha of a public shul. No, that's such a good taina. No, the Rabbanim, what do they do with that? So Gemara says, if you're concerned about that, no, if you were to be concerned about any diminution in Kedusha, so then you should be concerned about it the whole way through. There is still Kedusha to a private shul, it's just not the same Kedusha as a public shul. You should be concerned then about any situation. If you're concerned about some, you should be concerned about all of them. Because of the principle, you shouldn't be rovam hadras melech. Because a larger gathering is a bigger kedusha. It sanctifies God's name more. So since you're not concerned about it for a large city shul going to a, now becoming a small city shul, you shouldn't be concerned about a public shul going to a private shul as well. So that's the Chachamim's response to Rav Meir. Now we'll go to the next Mishnah. Ein mochrim beis ha-knes says, El al tanai, the people of the shul aren't allowed to sell their shul unless they sell it on the following tanai, sheim yirtsu yachziru, that if they wish, they can always purchase it back at any time that they want. In other words, while they're selling the shul right now, it always has a built-in clause that they automatically can buy it back at any point in time. That's the opinion of Rav Meir. That's the opinion of Rav Meir. The Chacham disagree. The Chacham Amrim, no. Mochum no salmem karolim. When they sell a shul, that's it. It's sold forever. You can't go buy it back. It's not fair to the purchasers. However, it is sold with the following conditions. Chutz mi arba dvarim. The purchasers are allowed to do anything that they want with it. They can turn it into housing. They can use it for non-degrading type of work. However, they're not allowed to go and put into the what was old, the old shul to make it into chutz mi arba dvarim. These four things, lemerachatz, they're not allowed to make it into a bathhouse. That's a degrading usage. People obviously are not dressed there. And there's shvitz and there's zuhama, all sorts of inappropriate things for a previous shul, labursaki, to make it into a tannery where they would tan hides. This was a foul-smelling process. It used soas klovim, used the excrement from dogs in the tanning process, very foul-smelling, and therefore that's an inappropriate usage for this former shul. Latvila, they shouldn't even make it into a mikveh, albeit a mikveh is a special place. But again, people are unclad, and people aren't in an appropriate state for what should have been a former shul. And lebeis hamayim, Rashi says lebeis hamayim, means either for a laundromat, a kvisa, or it means basically a bathroom, base mei raglayim, a place where you can go and urinate. So these are also inappropriate uses for a former shul, and therefore, while it is a permanent sale, but it has to be with this understanding that it can't be used for these four things. Now we have an even more lenient opinion, though, of Yehuda. Rav Yehuda Omer, Mochrino saw l'shem chatzer, that when you sell the shul, you sell it with the condition that it should be a chatzer. In other words, it should be used for dwelling type of purposes. However, once that is done, v'alokeach, after he goes and purchases it, can do with it whatever he wants. Masha yirtzayase. So there's a chumra over here that it has to be sold l'shem chatzer, but then there is a kula here that after the fact, once the purchaser has bought the shul, they can do with it whatever they want. So it's actually a kula here as well. The Rabbeinu Yonas saw Miluniel and the Nevuki Yosef understand Rabbi Yehuda as follows, that you're not allowed to sell it loim karenu ledaladvarim elu, but aflo letzorach beis hateven or beis habaker, that Rabbi Yehuda is being machmer. He says, no, not only can you not sell it to somebody and have it used for any of those four very inappropriate types of things for a former shul, but you can't even sell it for a storehouse to put your tevin in or to use it for your corral. However, that's the chumrah, but the kula is that once it is bought by the person, so as long as it's not with a understanding that he's going to use it for that, after he buys it, then he is allowed to do with it whatever he wants. So that's the kula part, and it's not considered a kedai because it's yotza mikdushasa. It already lost its kedusha, and as a result, now it can be used for anything, even those four somewhat degrading types of activities. So if you do, there's both a chumrah and a kula. Ultimately, it really is a kula. Morris starts and says, L'Rav Meir, Hechidai Rabba, Ha'habula Ribbis. Wait a second. How could, according to Rav Meir, allow this type of a transaction that the people bought the shul, now they have to return it when the shul wants to buy it back, but they are essentially having had the benefit of the shul for all that period of time. So it's as if they gave a loan to the shul, and now we're living in it rent-free for all that period of time, and therefore that's ribbis. So how could Rav Meir allow this? After all, isn't this ribbis? So Rav Yochanan explains, no. Rav Meir, b'shitas Rav Yehuda Amora, d'amar tzad echa b'ribbis mutter. No, in fact, Rav Meir holds like the shita of Rav Yehuda, and that is that when there's only a possibility of it being ribbis, there's no guarantee that the shul is ever going to purchase it back. So therefore, if the shul is definitely going to purchase it back, they say in 10 months we're going to purchase it back, then it would be ribbis on both sides. But here, there's only one side ribbis. Maybe they'll purchase it back, maybe they won't. And in that situation, as we'll see in a second, Rav Yehuda holds that that's not considered ribbis, and therefore Rav Meir holds like that sheet of Yehuda. What is the sheet of Rav Yehuda? The Tanya. If a person, Reuven, lent Shimon $100, and he wants to get paid back, so Shimon says, I can't pay you back right now, but here's my field. So this field is my collateral. Now, Bisman Shimocher Ochel Peiros, if Shimon, who gave the field, sold the field, so to say, to Reuven in replacement or for a temporary repayment of the debt, if he's still allowed to eat the fruits from that field, so then Mutter, then there's no problem of ribbis over here. But if Reuven is the Lokeach Ochel Peiros, and in this situation he's getting the fruits, and then he's going to get the money, and then he ate the fruits, that's ribbis also. That wouldn't be allowed. But Rav Yehuda disagrees. Rav Yehuda Omer, no, there's no guarantee that Shimon's ever going to pay back Reuven. And in fact, the giving him of the field may have been the payback. And therefore, Rav Yehuda Omer, afilu lokeach ochel peiros, even if Reuven is the one that's eating the fruits, nevertheless, it's mutter. This is what we call tzad echaz beribis is mutter. This is Rav Yehuda's point, and that is Rav Meir holds like Rav Yehuda. And about this, from Rav Yehuda, there's a maisa shoya, maisa bevaisa ben zonin, that will prove my point. What was that story? Sha'asa sadeo mecher. Alpi, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, he was the Shimon in our case, and he owed money to Reuven, so he gave him the field, and he said, if I pay you back, fine, then here is the field, and if I don't pay you back, this field is yours, and you're eating your own fruit, not a problem. And he said, however, if I do pay you back, you still can eat the fruits, and he did this with the supervision of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, the Lokeach Ochel Peiros Haya, and Reuven was eating the fruits in this case, not Baisus ben Zonin. So he clearly reviewed and says, you see that I'm right. However, the Chacham said to Rav Yehuda, no, you have the facts wrong. Amulo, Misham Raya, you bring us right from there. That's not the facts. Baisus ben Zonin was the one that was eating the fruits. Mocher ochel peiros hoya, v'lo lokeach, and therefore there was no ribbis at all. In any event, this is the opinion of Rav Yehuda that we have tzad echos beribis as mutter, and Rav Meir holds like that. Now, what is the machlokis over here between the Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda? My binayu tzad echa b'bris ikum binayu. That's what we said. Maris havar tzad echa b'bris muter. Rabbi Yehuda holds that tzad echa b'bris is muter, and Rabbi Meir holds like that. And the Tanakama maris havar tzad echa b'bris is osur, and the Chachamim say no, it's osur. So that's one teretz. That's the first teretz from Rabbi Yochanan. Now, Rav Amar, second teretz, as to how come Rav Meir is not concerned about ribbis. So he says the kuli amo tzad echa b'ribbis also. No, in fact, even Rav Meir doesn't hold like Rabbi Yehuda, and even Rav Meir holds tzad echa b'ribbis is also. So then, how can in this situation the people who purchased the shul and now are giving it back and getting paid for it, why is it that a ribbis problem? So Gemara says, v'ha'ocha, in this situation, ribbis amanas lahatzir ikubinayu. Here we're talking about, no, that if they do end up selling back the shul, then they'll retroactively pay rent. That's what Rameya says. They'll retroactively pay the rent. And in this situation, ma'asovar, Rav Yehuda holds, ribbis amanas lahatzir is mutter. This is permissible. And therefore, Yehuda would say that's why it's not a ribbis concern, because even though they, quote, took ribbis, but if they paid the ribbis back, so then it's not a problem. Whereas the Chacham hold, no, ma'asavar osur. And the Chacham say, no, that's osur. So Rav Meir is going in accord with the opinion of Rav Yehuda that as long as they pay the ribbis back, so then they've, so to say, nullified the ribbis concern. We quote the Mishnah, the Chacham said it's a permanent sale, and the only thing is, you can't use it for those four somewhat less nice usages, such as using it for a mericha, it's a bathhouse, a bursiki, a tannery, a latvila as a mikvah, or as a base amayim, either a laundromat or a bathroom. Okay, so I'm reviewed the Mishmuel. Review the Mishmuel says about this, mutu liodim lahashtin, mayim besoch talad amashul tefillah. Since we talked about using it as a base mayim, as a bathroom, so we're going to have some discussion about some bathroom halachos. So review the Mishmuel says that it is permissible for a person to urinate lahashtin mayim besoch talad amashul tefillah in a place that was within four amos of where a davening had been done. So that's his halacha. You're allowed to go and urinate even though it was within Dalet Amos of a place where they were previously davening. So Amar Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef says, my Kamashalom, what are you teaching us? This is a Beferish Mishnah. Tanina, we learned, Rav Yehuda Omer, Mochrin Osa L'shum Chotzer. We learned in our Mishnah that Rav Yehuda says that you sell it as a Chotzer. In other words, you sell it as a place to live. And then, after that is done, the Kedusha left it, as we explained from the Nuki Yosef and Rav Yochamino Lunil, V'lokeach Mashiyu Tziyase. And then, the purchaser now can do with it whatever he wants. And afilu the rabbanon lo kamri elabeis haknesis, the kriyat kedushase, and even the chachamim that argued with this opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, they only argued when it was already a permanent structure like a base knesis. Avol dalet amos, just a place where somebody once davened, the lo kriyat kedushasayu, that wasn't set up as a place where people are always davening, so it wasn't a set mokum tefila. Lo, even the chachamim said it's okay. So why are you, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, telling us a din that seems to be totally straight out of the Mishnah? Amavarim don't normally say things that are beferish in the Mishnah. Here it says beferish in the Mishnah that only in a shul possibly could you not make it into a place where you urinate, but certainly in a place where just somebody once daven, you can go urinate in that area. So Gemara says, Tani Tano Kamedi Rav Nachman, so one of the Amavarim that would say over the braises in front of Rav Nachman said the following, Hamispalel Marchik Dal Amos Umashtir, a person who is davening, so then Marchik Dal Amos, he has to move away Dal Amos from the place where he davened, and only then can urinate, umashtin. Vamashtin, and somebody who urinated, marchit dalet amos from his bowel. He should move away dalet amos, and only then can he daven. Now, what exactly is this teaching us? So, this Amora taught this Bryce in front of Rav Nachman, and Rav Nachman said, Amalei, Bishlomo, I understand, hamashtin, somebody who urinated, it has to move away dalet amos, marchit dalet amos from his bowel, because that's a beferish mission as well, tanina. How far does the person have to distance themselves from either urine or feces? Mehen, meaning urine, uminatsoa, or from excrement. How far does the person have to go distance themselves? Dalet amos. Has to be dalet amos away. There are a lot of other halachos practical in that regard. Can't be foul smelling still at that area if it's more than dalet amos away, but you can still smell it. You have to go further away. In any event, the basic din is that you have to remove yourself dalet amos from the place where the excrement or the urine was. So that we understand, that a brisa that you're bringing down clearly is agreed upon by the Mishnah. But the second statement that you made, Ela Mispalo, one who was davening, Marchik dalet amos umashtin, where you just temporarily davened in a place that you're not allowed to go and urinate in that place, Lomali, what? Why is that? Ihachi, because based upon that, kidashtenu lekulu shvile dinar doi. Every single place, somebody davened, somebody was chapping a mincha over here, somebody quickly davened marav over here at this place in time. So every single place on the roads of Naradai, somebody must have once davened over there. So therefore, you wouldn't be allowed to go urinate any place. They all have the status of a base knesses. So that can't be right. So Gemara said, Rav Nachman said, therefore your girsa was incorrect, that this Amora that was saying this price in front of Rav Nachman, it shouldn't have been Hamispalel Marchik Dalet Amos Umashtin, but it should have been instead Yisha, Tani Yisha. So he should have to wait Dalet Amos, the amount of time that it would take you to walk Dalet Amos, and then he could go and urinate. In other words, it's not proper to go and urinate right in the place the minute you finish davening. Wait the amount of time it would take you to walk Dalet Amos. What's the reason for that? So Bishloma Mashtin Yishta Kidehiluk Dalet Amos. So you read the whole Brisa now. So when a person urinated, he has to wait the amount of time it would take to walk Dalet Amos because Mishum Nitosis, because he still might have some drops coming out, and you certainly don't want them to be davening while those drops are there. Rashi explains, Shelo Yitfenu Bibgada Binitoso Sheba Muscle, because you will get your clothing dirty, so you shouldn't be davening when your clothing is wet. So you wait till it gets absorbed into the clothing or till the drops have come out, so it won't get absorbed into your clothing. So therefore, that's because of the Nitosos. But Ela Mispalo, why does a person who's davening have to wait till the amount of time it takes to walk Dalet Amos before he urinates? Lomali, why is that? So Rav Ashi explains, Shekol Dalet Amos Tfiloso Sudur Befit, because as soon as you finish davening, you don't just stop davening suddenly. 1 second you're davening, 1 second you're not davening. It doesn't work like that. The person's still thinking about the davening, still moving his lips, so to say, with the davening. And therefore, so the person's lips are still moving, and therefore, it's inappropriate for him to urinate while his lips are still moving and davening, while he's still, so to say, involved somewhat in the davening. Now we're going to start a discussion. It's a phenomenal discussion about why certain Gedolei Yisrael, to what they attribute their having a long life. Now, obviously, we can never really know that for certain, but when these Gedolim lived a very long life, so they were asked by the Talmidim, to what do you attribute the fact that you lived such a long life? And they would think, and they said, I was very machpid, or I would do these certain things, and that's probably the reason why they lived a long life. So we're going to have first the mnemonic, Zalfon Simon, that's the Zayin, Lamed, Pei, and Nun, of the four Rabbonim that we're going to be talking about. So the first one is Rav Zakkai, that's the Zayin. So Shalu Tamid was Rabbi Zakkai. They asked Rabbi Zakkai. Some say that this is the father of Yochanan ben Zakkai, but since we don't refer to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai as Rabbi Yochanan ben Rabbi Zakkai, some suggest, no, this is a different Zakkai. In any event, the Tamidim asked this great sage, this Rabbi Zakkai, Bamer after Yomim, he lived to a ripe old age, to what do you attribute the fact that you lived so long? So Amalehem, so he told him the following reasons. In all of my life, I never once urinated within Dalet Amos of where I davened. Now, we just learned that you technically just have to wait the amount of time to walk Dalet Amos, but then you could urinate right where you davened. But he went, Lifnei Meshur Sadin. And one of the overriding things that we'll see from all of these great Talmidei Chachamim, to what they attributed their long life, is they went Lifnei Meshur Sadin. So they went Lifnei Meshur Sadin, so Midah Kenegimi, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them a longer life than they might have deserved. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu went Lifnei Meshur Sadin with them. So as Tosus points out over here, Ba'afilu Hecha, Sheyesh Heter Gomor, Kigon Sheshor, Kidehil Dalet Amos. Even in a situation where he could have urinated over there, he still moved away Dalet Amos. Number two, V'lo Kinisi, Shem L'chaveirai. And I never called a friend by a nickname. Again, what's the Lifnei Meshur Sadin over here? So Tosus points out, Afilu Kinoi, D'lo Hevegnai. Even a nickname that's not a bad name, right? You call somebody Fats. You call somebody, you know, Skinny. So those are nicknames that are pejorative. But you call somebody, you know, by a name that's not a pejorative, you make up some nickname that's not a pejorative nickname for the person. So then, technically, you're allowed to call a person that. And when the Mishnah in But the Metzia says that Machane Shem L'Chaveiro El Chelik Olam Haba, it's only Bikinu Shel Pagam Mishpacha. It's only if you're using a negative type of a nickname. So what Rav Zakkai did was even a nickname that was halachically allowed, he didn't use. He said, call the person by name. His name is Yankel, I call him Yankel. I don't call him a different name. Okay. V'lo Bitalti Kiddush Hayom. And I always very, very careful to make Kiddush on wine on Shabbos. So he did this Friday night, he did the Shabbos lunch, and some of the Farshim bring down from the story that we're about to say that he did this at Shalat Shudas as well. In fact, if you look in Shulchan Aruch, not very well known halacha, the Mishnah Berurah brings down that a person should make a Bar Pi Hagaf and should make Kiddush at Shalat Shudas as well. And here you do it after you wash, because it's not like the Kiddush that we make before the Suda by Friday night and Shabbos lunch, but it is brought down that a person should try to have Bar Pri HaGafen at Shalat Shudas as well. So therefore, he was very machbid on this, and he attributed his long life because of the fact that he was so machbid in these areas. Then it tells us, Ima Zekena Yisali. Rav Zaki said, I had an Ima Zekena. Some suggest that means grandmother, an older woman, meaning a grandmother. Others say, no, it just means his mother who was old. Now, this is an important, if his mother was old, or if it was a grandmother, that we should know this because of some of the facts in this story, which I'll point out in a moment. So, he had this elderly either mother or grandmother, and Pam Achas, Mochra Kipa Shibarosha, she sold the covering, the tichel that she had on her head, she sold that, and in order that he should be able to have money to buy wine for Kiddush, Rav Yili Kiddush Hayom. So, she bought me wine. Now, she was an old lady, so why was it necessary to tell us that piece of information? So the Ben Yehuda says that you might think, of course, that she would then go outside with her hair uncovered, and that Chas HaShom would be a problem. How could Rav Zakkai accept this gift from his mother, and now she would go out with her hair uncovered? So he points out that she was an older lady, and therefore she didn't go outside that much, and as a result, there would be no problem with her hair being uncovered. That's one explanation. Alternatively, the Ben Yehuda suggests that since she was an older lady, she wasn't so machbid on her appearance, so she put on something else that would also just cover her hair, and she went out with a less beautiful head covering. She sold a very fancy head covering to be able to buy wine. He also points out a very interesting thing. Look at the language. He says, Mochra Kipa Shivarosha. She sold the tichel that was on her head. In other words, it's not like she had 20 tichels, and she therefore sold one of her extra tichels. She had very few tichels, so she sold the one that she had on her head, and therefore that shows you the greatness of her performance of this mitzvah so that her son should have wine. Mark continues and tells us, Tana Kishimeso, when Rav Zakkai's mother, this Ima Zakena, passed away, he nichalo gimel meos garbi yayin. She left him 300 barrels of wine. Now, the number 300 is sometimes an exaggeration, but here, some suggest that it means 300. That was kineged the shalosh su'udos of Shabbos. That's why the number 300 specifically is used, the three aspect of it. In any event, she left him a large number of barrels of wine that he would be able to continue being makbid on always making Kiddush on wine all three meals of Shabbos. And when he died, when Zakkai died, he niach lebanav shloshes alofim garbi yayin. He left 3,000. In other words, his bracha continued to the further generations, and because of the schus of the mother of Rav Zakkai, that she was willing to be mosa nefesh for this mitzvah, so he was zocha to be mosa nefesh himself and leave over a tremendous amount of wine for his children to make sure that they could make Kiddush on wine on Shabbos. Rav Huna was also very careful about making Kiddush on wine on Shabbos. Rav Huna hava asa risa v'koy kamei d'Rav. So he had to sell his fancy belt, and therefore he came in front of Rav while he was wearing some sort of a grass belt. And that was his gartel. And he went in front of Rav dressed that way. Rav Huna was one of the star pupils of Rav. So Rav says to him, what are you doing? Amalei, my high, how come you're wearing a grass belt instead of your regular gartel? So Amalei, so Rav Huna told his Rebbe, Rav, lo hava li kedusha, I didn't have enough money to buy wine for Shabbos, so therefore, umishkante, I gave over, I pawned my lehem yonai, my belt, and with that money, I was able to purchase wine for Shabbos. So I made kedusha, and I got wine for Shabbos. So Rav was so impressed with this. Amalei, Rav said to him, "Yehei Rava, it should be HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will that titon bishiroi, that you should be so wealthy someday that you'll be covered up with silk." That's a very fancy and expensive type of a garment. And it was. Where else would tell us that Rav Huna became extremely wealthy. Ki iklal Rabba Berei, and when Rav Huna's son, Rabba, was going to be married, so Rav Huna, igish inish gutzahava, Rav Huna was a very diminutive person, he was a very small person, very short, and gona apurye, he lay down on a bed, and asyan binase, Ukalose, and his daughter and daughters-in-law came into that room, and they didn't see him over there, Mustama, and Shalchan Vishajan Manayu Alei, and they all took off their silk garments that they were wearing, the outer garments, and they threw it on top of the bed. They didn't see him there, Mustama. Adi'itum Bishiroi, and he was covered up in all the silk garments. In other words, he had become very wealthy. He was able to purchase silk garments for his daughters and daughters-in-law, and this fulfilled the bracha that Rav had given him, that he said, you should be covered up, the titum Bishiroi. So the bracha came true. Now, Shama Rav. Rav heard about how wealthy Rav Huna had become, and he was upset a little bit. V'ikbid. He said, Amar, he said to Rav Huna, my taima lo amr sli. When I gave you this blessing that you should be covered up with silver, you should have said, my taima lo amr sli, ki berachtich. At the time that I gave you the bracha, you should have said, v'chein lamar. Right? The very common expression, v'chein lamar. So do you. Why didn't you give me that bracha? So Rav was a little bit upset because I could have also been very, very wealthy if you had said v'chein lamar. This was a shas ratzon, and therefore that would have come true. No, the Mefarshim asked, why didn't Rav Huna say this? So again, that's the reason why it says that Rav Huna inish gut sahaba. He was a very small person, and Rav was a very tall person. Rav, we have elsewhere, was very tall. So if, in fact, Rav Huna had said to Rav, v'chein lamar, it would have been a half-hearted bracha, because I only need a certain small amount to be covered up, you would need a much larger amount to be covered up, and therefore he felt it was inappropriate to give such a paltry bracha to his Rebbe, and that's why he didn't do it. Okay. Shalom Tamidim is Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua. The Tamidim answered Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua, b'mer atu yomim, to what do you attribute your great length of life? So he told them the following reasons. Miyomai, all my life, lo asisi kapandria, the base of Knesset. I never made a shortcut through the base Knesset. I always went around the base Knesset rather than going through the base Knesset. We're going to learn in tomorrow's shir that there's an issue to go through the base of Knesset to use it as a shortcut. So he did lifnei mishur sadim. Even when it's permissible to do, to go through the base of Knesset, he didn't go through the base of Knesset. Number two, Velopa Sati al Rosh Yam HaKadosh. I would always either come early to shul so I didn't have to step on the people, or even if there was a situation, I made sure not to go step on the people. It's not proper to step on the Tamidim. So I was very, very careful never to do this. So the Mefarshim explained that he always would come to shul early, and therefore he wouldn't go and have to ever step on their head, so to say. And furthermore, Velona Sosi Kapai below Brocha, and I never duchened, he was a Kohen. I never duchen without making a bracha. The Farshim will ask, of course, every kohen makes a bracha when he duchens. So some of the better terutzim that I saw are that he didn't say amen to their bracha. The Rif, the Riaf in the Ein Yaakov says that rather than just answering amen to their bracha, so he always went and made the bracha himself. So this way it would be a higher level. The Anaf Yosef brings down that he made the nusach of the bracha the way it is. We start off by saying, Asher kidushanu b'kidushaso shel Aaron. And that's the first part, that you made us holy Kohanim, and then we can give the bracha to Klai Yisrael. So he made the nusach of the bracha that way, that first they thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for making them Kohanim, and only then are they allowed to go and bless the people. So that's what it means, that Lona Sasi Kapi below bracha. He was arranging the nusach of this bracha. And the Eri brings down that even if he duchen several times a day, he always made the bracha. Next we go, Shalom Tamid of Israel Preda, the Tamid of Israel Preda, Bamer after Yomim, to what do you attribute your long life? Now, Tosus brings down that the Gemara elsewhere tells us why he had a long life. He had one Talmud that he spent a lot of time teaching. He had to go over 400 times to teach his Talmud. He wasn't as fast as Tamidim, of the Tamidim, and he taught everything to him 400 times. And one time he was in a little bit of a rush, or Preda was in a little bit of a rush, so he taught it to him a little bit too quickly, and the Talmud sensed that the Rebbe was in a rush, and he couldn't learn it. So Rav Preda went and taught it to him another 400 times to show him how important it is to spend the proper time with the Talmud. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was kavyochel so impressed with this that he said to him, I will give you 400 years of life, or I will let you bring in this entire generation that you live in to Olam Haba. Which do you want? So Rav Preda, of course, said, bring in the entire generation to Olam Haba. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, oh, since you asked for that, you'll get that as well as you get 400 years of life. So Tosfos asks, so why are you telling me? We had that story elsewhere. So Tosus answered, because he didn't know at that time that it would be true. It's only afterwards, when he lived 400 years, that he realized that that, in fact, was true. Alternatively, it was due to both things, the things that he mentions here now, as well as that story. In any event, Rav Preda said, nobody ever got to the Beis Medrash before I did. In other words, I made sure that I was the first one in the Beis Medrash, my Zrizus, to learn Torah. Furthermore, we turn to Chesam and Aleph, and I never said Birchas HaMazon if there was a Kohen present. As Rashi says, Besuda Lefnei Kohen. I would always give the cover to the Kohen to be the one to lead the Birchas HaMazon. As the Pasuk says, V'kidash Tau, L'chol Dover Shebekdusha, L'vtoach Rishon or L'varach Rishon. So I always made sure that the Kohen got the Zechus, the Kavod, of leading the benching, and they didn't give it to me. And furthermore, V'lo Achalti Mi Behema, Shalohur Mumat Noseah. And I didn't eat from a Behema that the Matnas kahuna weren't taken off from it. The zera lechayim and the keva weren't given to the kohen. So I always made sure that those were given first, and then I would only eat from it. Now, technically, the behemoth wasn't tevel, and he could have eaten from it, but he was makbid not to eat from such an animal until the matnas kahuna were taken off. Now, this is a good break point for us over here, albeit we're in the middle of the story about Repreda. We'll chazer again what Repreda attributed his long life to in tomorrow's shir, but at this point we'll stop, but this will conclude today's shir.